that we're trying to do clean up here. The number of different pieces of legislation that have been kind of hanging around for a while. We're going to start with House Bill 2237. And there are -10 amendments to this bill. And if I understand correctly, this bill originally came to us from the Senate floor after it was defeated based on the bill having some collective bargaining language in it. The B-10 amendment does not have that language. It deletes that language from the bill and retains what was originally in the bill as it came to the House before it got to the General Government Committee. So anyways, the collective bargaining components are extracted out of the bill in the B-10 amendment. In addition, we have added Section 11 on page 2 of the amendment, a section of House Bill 3329, which left this committee with this amendment in it. And I think we've got the Department of Justice here to talk about that. Kevin, are you supposed to do this or someone else?
Connie,
do you want to chat about this? The other change in the B-10 amendment is in Section 9, where the appointment of the Director of the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training. The current language is that the person appointed as director shall be selected among a list of 3 or more candidates submitted by the department. This simply makes it broader so that the governor can appoint whoever they choose. But the board obviously can select or a list of persons to submit to the governor, similar to how you appoint judges, I suppose. Connie?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Connie Gallagher, Director of Crime Victims Assistance with the Oregon Department of Justice. I believe this language will look familiar to you. It's very simple, straightforward language that references the explicit authority that the Department of Justice would like in order to respond to incidents of mass violence. Many of these efforts in terms of planning and training are already underway. We are working with our partners throughout the state. But what we ask is that this language be added to our statutory authority just to make things a little bit clearer in the event of an incident. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Any discussion or questions? Okay. We're in a work session. Do we have 4 votes to move this thing or not?
No.
Senator Ringo, would you move the adoption of the
Chair, move the B-10 amendments to House Bill 2237.
Senator Ringo moves the adoption of the B-10 amendments to House Bill 2237. Is there any discussion? Any objections? No objection. Passes. Senator Friel, Senator Ringo. Well, I forget, I should confuse the two of you.
Oh, no. We're politically quite close together. We sit next to each other on the committee.
He's blue collar, I'm like.
Exactly right.
Senator Ringo.
Mr. Chair, move House Bill 2237 as amended to the floor with the do-pass recommendation.
All right. Senator Ringo now moves House Bill 2237 to the floor of the Senate with the do-pass recommendation as it was amended by this committee. Any further discussion? Any objections? Motion passes, and I'll carry that bill. All right. Let me go to Senate Bill 937. This is a public hearing. I believe this is a new bill that was introduced. We thought we handled the problem that the bill was introduced for as a priority. I think it was Senator Devlin. It appears as though we didn't get everything fixed. Mr. Kova is here to talk about that.
Good morning, Chair Menison, members of the committee. I'm Marshall Kova, representing the American Council of Engineering Companies of Oregon. I'm here today in support of the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 937. These amendments simply clarify that an engineer is not an investigator when performing the duties of an engineer. Recently, a member of ACEC Oregon was contacted by the Oregon Board of Investigators with a letter stating that he may be conducting investigations or representing himself as a private investigator in the state of Oregon without the required license or registration. The letter indicated that the engineer could be subject to a civil penalty as well as criminal prosecution for his conduct. This particular engineer is now unsure about his ability to testify in future cases or to perform work related to engineering. They may not even make it into the courtroom. Many other engineers are now concerned about this interpretation by the board. As you can see, if you have a copy of Senate Bill 937, there are already a number of professions that have come forward to be exempted from this investigator statute. They include insurance agents, livestock, brand inspectors, animal trainers, attorneys, and many others. We simply ask that the engineers be added to this list of exempted professions from the requirement to be licensed as an investigator in order to do the job we have been educated and trained to perform. Thank you.
All right. Any questions?
Statement, Mr. Chairman.
I'm sorry?
Statement, Mr. Chairman.
Go ahead.
I don't care anything about all the other people, but we have to protect the livestock branding stuff.
All right. There we go. Anyone else wishing to testify on Senate Bill 937? Work session, Senate Bill 937.
Chair.
Senator Ringo.
Move the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 937.
Senator Ringo now moves the -1 amendments to Senate Bill 937. Is there any additional discussion? Any objections to the motion? If not, motion passes. Thank you very much. That bill is gone. And who wants to carry that bill? Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm sorry. I missed a step.
You're just doing everything wrong because I'm not here.
I'm all flustered. I just don't know what to do. You're gone. Senator Birdie.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move Senate Bill
937
as amended to the Senate floor with a DPAS recommendation.
All right. Senator Burdick moves Senate Bill 937 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a DPAS recommendation. Any discussion? Any objection? Motion passes. And Senator Farrell?
I will carry, Mr. Chairman.
Background as an investigator.
That is your pleasure.
That puppy. All right, let's see. What other interesting stuff do we have here? We have 2498 is yet again not ready. Let's talk about 2725. Work session on 2725. There are no amendments to that bill. And let's see, it's the A3 amendment. And Mr. Powell, you're here. This is an issue that we've had before the committee numerous times. The truth detection bill, I think it was Senate Bill 356, died, unfortunately, in the House Judiciary Committee without any action. I received a call from the detective from Wayne County who indicated that they would like to have this bill. I consented to have the amendment drafted to be placed in House Bill 2725 as an amendment to the bill. We did previously have a public hearing, I believe, on this. President Brzezinski, I think.
No.
Okay. All right. And is there any, going to talk amongst ourselves, any problem there? All right, let's do a work session, 2725. Senator Burdick.
Mr. Chairman, I don't see my amendment. This is a dash.
A3.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, I would move the dash A3 amendment for right. House Bill 2725.
All right, Senator Burdick moves the adoption of the A3 amendment for House Bill 2725. Any discussion beyond that, which this committee already had on this issue? Not. Motion passes. If there's no opposition, no opposition. Kind of pass backwards. All right, Senator Burdick.
Mr. Chairman, I would move House Bill 2725 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Thank you very much. Senator Burdick now moves House Bill 2725 to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Any objection? None. Motion passes. And Senator Starr, would you please? All right. And now for another juicy divide, let's see, House Bill 3426. We have some additional refined amendments on this bill. Council, you want to talk about this? Just
I will, Mr. Chairman. Members of the committee, 3426 is the bill that came over from the House that was dealing with deadly force. And we had discussions about that bill and the amendments that we had before the committee. We had a public hearing on the issue of grand jury of situations where a police officer uses deadly physical force that results in the death of a person. This is those amendments with some changes in the DPSST portion as to who shall be trained in the use of critical incident use of force. Page section, if you look at the amendments, page 8 adds a subsection on line 2 that says the amendments we looked at before said the critical incident use of force would have to be provided by the department, the DPSST, to not only police officers but corrections officers, parole officers, and probation officers. This makes that discretionary upon the department to do so.
And I might add that the purpose of making that amendment was to try to reduce the overall fiscal and I think burden on the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training to reach this objective. Council. The implementation dates, I think.
Right? Correct. The implementation dates also have been changed, Your Honor. Excuse me, Mr. Chairman. I'm good. defaulting to when I'm confused and Your Honor, I object.
Somewhere there's a licensing board that's opening a file right now.
Your Honor, there I go again. Mr. Chairman, I think there is a change in the implementation dates, and I want to look at those. It looks like...
Section 7 and 9, it's section 17 on page 9.
That's correct.
7 and 9, operative July 1 of 04.
That's correct, Your Honor, Mr. Chairman, and that is the...
I got him fooled.
I'm totally...
Mr. Chairman, all you need to do to stop that is just grab the gavel, and every time he calls you, Your Honor, just overrule.
Overrule.
I object.
Mr. Chairman, that is correct. The dates, the operative dates for the sections that deal with the presenting these to a grand jury would be July 1, 2004. And that is found in section 17 of the bill.
All right. Any discussions on the amendments?
You know, I'm missing my...
You're just befuddled today, aren't you?
You got the dash
AA. About a little earlier this morning.
Yeah.
Chairman, can I just ask?
Sure.
I saw a couple of earlier drafts. What is the status of the district? You know, where are people standing on this? The district attorneys and so on.
You want to know what the district attorney's opinion is of this?
Yeah.
All right. We've got somebody from the District Attorney's Association, Mr. Perry. You're here. All right, Mr. Berry.
Good morning. I'm Brad Berry. I'm Yamhill County District Attorney, Vice President of the Oregon District Attorney Association, Chair of the Legislative Committee for the DA's Association. Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick, I think your question was, what was the DA's position on this? I think there were several of us here during the public hearing talking about it. The DA's Association officially took a no position position on this bill. The original thoughts, and we'd shared this with Senator Minnis, basically dealt with a general feeling that we were very concerned about opening grand jury proceedings for any reason. And we discussed, and I'd be happy to discuss those further, the reasons for the confidentiality of the grand jury proceeding. However, we were just as quick to state that Senator Minnis had been very receptive to we had some very big concerns of the original drafting of this, and as modified, giving more discretion, leaving discretion with DAs that they have always had in determining how to handle these cases, and some of the other issues being taken care of, we ultimately came up with a no position position. And I think that genuinely reflected the membership bifurcating on not getting into grand juries at all, as well as saying that if we're going there, this allows continued discretion and is significantly limited, especially in light of the legislative findings contained in the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right, thank you. Just as a note, I think Mr. Shrunk from Multnomah County testified before this committee that he did support.
He did.
The bill, and probably even a broader context in the association, but that was his own personal.
He did, correct. Idea,
so.
And thank you for indulging me. I went back and forth and I just lost track.
Yeah,
talked about this for a while. Thank you.
All right. Anybody else wishing to come up?
Thank you.
Share their heart. Oh. Okay. This is a work session, so here we go.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Burdick.
I would move the dash AA to the amendment to House Bill 3426.
All right. Senator Burdick moves the adoption of the AA amendments to House Bill 3426. Any discussion? Any objections? Sound of the motion passes. If this is a matter of note, this does not delete the existing bill. It is an amendment to the bill as it came over. So.
And that's good, Mr. Chairman. I think that was a good bill to start out with.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chairman, I would move House Bill 3426 as amended to the Senate floor for the 2 pass recommendation.
All right, Senator Burdick moves House Bill 3426 to the floor of the Senate with pass recommendation. Additional discussion. Is there any objection to the motion? There's no objection. The motion passes, and we'll carry the bill along with perhaps several others. All right, we've got a couple of other issues then, which we'll close the work session. And let's go to, are we ready on 2308? This is an issue that we dealt with a long time ago. It's been an ongoing controversy, so see if we can get anywhere or not. Sir.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. For the record, my name is Paul Cosgrove, and my client in this issue is the Association of Health Information Outsourcing Services. Some of the larger medical and other healthcare facilities, including hospitals, use our members to perform the functions of retrieving, validating authorizations, and copying medical records to fulfill a variety of kinds of requests from a variety of different people. This bill and the Dash A3 amendments that I think you have in front of you does some adjustment to House Bill 2305. As you may recall, when this committee looked at House Bill 2305, it was a bill that did a variety of statutory changes to bring Oregon law into compliance with the Federal Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act, commonly known as HIPAA. In this committee, there was also an amendment to adopt a fee schedule for copying of medical records in those facilities. And since that time, we've been able to gather the data that I don't think was available at the time when the committee considered that fee schedule that shows that fee schedule is very problematic with respect to a number of institutions in terms of their current costs. I've passed out a handout. I'd just briefly like to mention on the second bullet, for the committee's benefit, that the retrieval and copying of medical records, particularly in institutions that have multiple clinical facilities, a variety of medical clinics or hospitals, is a very complex job. It's not just simply a matter of copying on a Xerox machine. The retrieval and authorization, especially under the federal law, is a relatively complex process. The data that I have before you in the third and fourth bullets discuss two Portland-based healthcare systems. Both of these systems have multiple medical clinics. One of them also has dental clinics, and then they have one or more hospitals. And the before House Bill 2305 fee schedule took effect, the first one, which contracts with, frankly, one of our members, their fee schedule is as set out there. It was $23 plus 65 cents for the first 100 pages and a slightly lower fee thereafter. With the implementation of the 2305 fee schedule, that institution has had its revenue reduced more than $28,000 a month, and that's revenue that was, those were fees that were set to cover that institution's costs for providing those services. The fourth bullet reflects another institution, healthcare institution and system in Portland, and it does all of this copying service with its own staff. Both of these are not-for-profit institutions, and you can see their fee schedule was significantly above the one included in House Bill 2305, and you can see that since the implementation of that fee schedule, they're projecting a loss of $400,000 a year. So what we are suggesting is a couple of adjustments to the fee schedule. Prior to the adoption of the fee schedule, Oregon was under a system where reasonable fees were the standard in the statute. And we agree with Senator Ringo, who was the proponent of the fee schedule, that a fee schedule that sets fees is probably more appropriate, especially to make sure it covers the outlier kinds of issues where people have a very different view of reasonable than maybe you or I would have. And there have been, I think, some individual doctor's offices or elsewhere who might have charged considerably more than what we had thought would be reasonable. But the adjustments we're proposing are to change the per-page charge from 25 cents to 50 cents, and also, very importantly, to add an indexing so that this issue, once a year, the Department of Human Services would look at what the CPI index had done over the last year and either adjust this fee up or down once a year. It wouldn't be an ongoing adjustment every day or every month, but just once a year, so that this issue would not have to be brought back to the legislature for adjustment every session. Those are the two things that would be accomplished in the A3 amendments to House Bill 2308, which we ask your support for, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Right, any questions?
Mr. Chair?
Senator Ringo.
Just a couple. Paul, I appreciate your working with me on this issue, and I know you're kind of late to the issue and weren't here to lobby on it earlier. You represent several copying charge companies that are private companies, correct?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ringo, yes.
And they're for-profit companies.
That is correct.
So, I mean, their interest may not be so much saving the hospital's money as making sure that they can continue to operate on their same profit margin.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ringo, yes. The typical arrangements, if I might just briefly describe them, are if the situation is that the institution, the healthcare institution, has set a fee schedule, if permitted by state law, that fully covers the cost, generally speaking, and if they've decided we can do it cheaper than their own in-house staff, we collect the fee, provide the service from beginning to end, and that's the end of the story. If there's a lesser fee schedule, we have to renegotiate that with the hospitals, and generally speaking, either we won't be able to do the service or they'll have to do it at whatever loss they have.
Well, I think, don't you think it's fair to say that you're here because some of your companies are concerned their profits might be diminished under the current fee schedule?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Ringo, I don't think it's so much that our profits would be diminished, but if the institution isn't willing to subsidize our costs to make up for an inadequate fee schedule, we won't be able to serve them, and we'll just have to find our business in another state. That I think, is the more likely scenario. We can't operate at a loss, certainly for very long, and we wouldn't be able to continue in business if we did.
Yeah, but those institutions are still going to have to provide records. And they can't stop providing medical.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Rigo, and I think that's what would happen in the second scenario. If they weren't willing to subsidize us to cover our costs in a reasonable profit, they'd have to do it themselves at whatever loss. That's why this handout suggests what their loss would be, because ultimately it would end up being their loss. We would lose the business potentially if they, but it would end up being their loss.
Thank you.
Go
ahead.
Well, I just wanted to follow up on that, because if the hospitals are going to lose money by doing it on their own, and you can come in and do it more efficiently because that's your area of expertise, wouldn't it be still in the hospital's best interest to hire your companies because they would lose less money that way? I'm not even accepting the premise that money is going to be lost, but if that were true, wouldn't they lose less money by hiring a firm that could do it more efficiently?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burick, I think perhaps all the different arrangements are enough varied because there are three individual companies that are in our association, and there's actually a local company that works for OHSU that I don't know what their situation is. I think in some cases the hospitals might decide, yes, they would subsidize us to have us continue to do it if they felt that was the least loss for them. But in any case, there will be, based on the fact that these fees were set to cover either our costs or their costs or a combination of our costs, and we've now reduced that fee, there will be a loss somewhere in the system. And I think it'll vary from institution to institution, company to company, how that plays out.
Mr. Chairman, I said at the beginning when I was supporting Senator Rigo on this that, you know, it certainly wasn't my intent, now it was this committee's intent, to have people lose money on this. But we had so many flagrant examples of clearly overcharging that, you know, I would just feel more comfortable giving it some experience before they go in and fiddle around with it. The fee schedule we adopted, I think, sounds reasonable. I don't want to lose business for any company, but I think this came about for a reason. There was a real problem there.
If I may respond, Mr. Chairman, Senator Burdick, and we agree that a fee schedule, at least one that's reasonable and hopefully one that is indexed so that it either goes up or down as cost of living goes up or preferably down for all of us, is an appropriate way to do the system. Many states have adopted fee schedules. It gets rid of the dispute or debate about what is reasonable. It puts an upper limit on it. So we're supportive of a fee schedule, The problem is that the current fee schedule in House Bill 2305 is just not workable in terms of covering the costs of providing the service.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I could follow up on that point.
Sure.
Senator Ringo, when he put in this fee schedule, he went to other states and got a sense of what some other states were doing. Do you have examples from other states that take this approach?
Yes, and I actually have a list of all the states behind me, and I can get that, but I can remember some of them off the top of my head. The state of Washington's fee schedule, which is subject to indexing and has been indexed once, so it's higher than this, but the one in their statute is an initial fee of $19 and then 83 cents per page for the first 20 pages and 63 cents thereafter. I have been told that that has moved up to slightly over $20, somewhere in the 90 cent a page and somewhere in the high 60 cent a page since the indexing. It was adopted several years ago. There are other states that clearly have lower fee schedules. Kentucky had said it, all records would be free, and all of our companies left the state of Kentucky until the hospitals decided that we could provide it more efficiently than they're, and they're paying us our costs, but there's no fee schedule at all permitted in Kentucky. So it does have a wide variety. From our perspective, $25.50 is sort of a middle-of-the-road standard. It does not, in fact, totally recoup the losses for either of these two institutions. There would still be a loss of revenue beyond what they're currently collecting to provide the service. They'd have to become more efficient or pick up that revenue from somewhere else. It is a middle-of-the-road position, we believe, and in line with what other states, it would be lower than Washington State.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Farrell.
Mr. Chairman, I think we're losing sight of the base of the piece of legislation, which was that records were prohibitively expensive under certain circumstances for litigation purposes and other public purposes, and so a fee schedule is desirable. I was compelled by my white-collar colleagues' argumentation in that regard. But if I walked across the parking lot and lost a quarter, that quarter would truly be lost. I would have lost it. But if I am a hospital institution and I lose 25 cents on a copy, I charge it to somebody. I mean, this is a hydraulic. These losses don't just disappear like my lost quarter in the parking lot. These charges show up on hospital bills, or they show up in insurance claims. So, you know, I'm compelled by the argument that we ought to set a fee schedule, but perhaps we shot low. And the testimony before us today is that we shot low. You know, I would think that we ought to try to make this as neutral as possible, you know, provide the access at a reasonable cost, but not suck money out of the systems that just show up on patients and insurance claims billing statements. So I think this doesn't sound unreasonable. $25 plus 50 cents a page seems to me, regardless of how it fits into the global scale schedule, not unreasonable. It certainly gives people a bar that they can reach for access. And you know, I guess I don't have much of an opinion on the indexing, but you know, the idea is if we make these fees too low and the institutions that use these services end up passing the charges along, we haven't really saved anybody anything.
Senator Ringo, I guess
just a couple points. I don't know what the right number is. All I know is consumers were being gouged, you know, because these costs were passed on to ordinary consumers. And in the course of my discussions with Mr. Bishop of the Hospital Association, I asked for his suggestion. And he wouldn't give me a suggestion as to what we ought to charge for a fee schedule. At that time, I did not know really where other states were. I think I'd had discussions about the state of Washington. Since then, Paul's given me a schedule for I think most states, maybe 40 states or so, have fee schedules. I didn't even know that this many states had fee schedules. And they're all over the place. Some of them, the minimum charge is $1 a page. For Florida's 25 cents a page, Indiana's 25 cents a page, Kentucky, first copy free, Missouri's 37 cents a page, New Jersey's 25 cents a page, Oklahoma's 25 cents, Tennessee's 25 cents. So what we arrived at isn't out of line with what a lot of states are doing. Some of these states differentiate between hospitals and clinics. They have a different fee schedule because when Paul and I talk about this, hospitals, it might be a little more complicated because they're so big, they have to go to different parts of their organization to bring the records together, whereas a smaller clinic doesn't have that problem. I think it's a really complicated question, and I would hope that we just give it a couple years to see what really happens. I don't think, to say the hospitals are losing money, I appreciate the data Paul's brought together, but I don't question his credibility at all. But in this type of question, for the first data to arrive a week ago, I think we need to give it more scrutiny. I just think we need to give it more scrutiny. So I think it makes sense to leave things where they are. And don't worry, I'm sure we'll be back here next session and we'll have a little track record to see what's happened. I'd also point out that are the hospitals losing money? I don't know. I mean, these are the same people that have been charging $5 for an aspirin and say, you know, this is the same thing. They've been operating this as a profit center. And the money that may be lost isn't down the drain. This is money that's shifted to consumers. So it's not like, Senator Ferry always talked about cost shifting, and that's a good point. There is cost shifting involved. But the people that are gaining from this are consumers. And I would submit, again, that Mr. Costco is here because his companies are going to have to look at the profit margin on this. And that's really what's driving them to be involved in this process at this late date.
So. All right. I want to make, for the record, Jane Myers with the Oregon Dental Association submitted a question to the committee as with respect to 2308A3 amendments. Actually, she makes some good points into the bill in general, but it says the bill and the 2308A3 amendments are silent on the costs of the production of health care records that are not paper. She says, for example, radiographs and plaster models, is it the intent that the bill or the law apply only to paper? So that raises an interesting question. I don't know the answer to it. So. Mr. Crossman.
Mr. Chairman, I can answer it in part. The part I don't know how to answer is the models, but because I'm not sure they're considered records. But I do know radiographs are considered healthcare records. That's one of the reasons that it's a more complex problem than just production of regular pieces of paper. We take EKG and EEG strips, and we take things on microfilm, and we take x-rays, and we make copies of those, reduce them, take them in whatever format they are, and put them in a format that we can't reproduce them. So I think the answer to radiographs is yes. I'm not sure the answer to the plaster models. I would expect maybe they're not records. I just don't know. I'm sorry.
This interesting story on the HIPAA thing, I think, is going to get totally out of control. Mm-hmm. I got a request from my health insurance company to provide information on a particular claim for one of my dependents. And when I called them to try to get clarification, because all I had was a claim number, they wouldn't release the information to me because I'm the insured and they're a dependent, and they haven't released the information to me. So my question to the insurance company was, well, why did you send me the letter then? If you can't provide me the information, why didn't you send it to the person who is the claimant and not just the insured, because they can answer the question, I can't. So why are you wasting my time?
Mr. Chairman, I don't represent the health insurers, but I can certainly empathize with your comment. I think what it is a reflection of is that HIPAA, which just became effective, I think it was April 1st or April 15th, sometime this year, is still working its way through the system, and people are having difficulty complying, which is part of our problem.
I feel sorry for her too, Mr. Chair.
I suggest. Unfortunately, it's recorded, and I hope she shares it with her supervisors, because I said, look, first off, they've got you calling me, you're having to listen to me ask you questions that you're not very happy with. And the bottom line is, I'm stuck. I'm caught between a rock and a hard place. So if you want the information you've requested from me, you have to ask the person who's authorized under the law to release it to you. Not me. Quit bothering
to
go away. So,
anyway. One of the factors that continues to make the process that we're engaged in more expensive and more complex. We need to deal with all of those new federal issues and try to work them through in a way that's reasonable.
Well, I assume this particular health carrier would probably want to review the issue, because I'm sure it's costing them a lot more money to employ somebody to ask me stupid questions. All right.
I'm still compelled to try to make this thing revenue neutral as possible. And the fact of the matter is that we're opposing a fee schedule. That's a good thing.
Because I believe that access has been unreasonably not denied, perhaps, but extortionary in a sense. But I think that would make it rather neutral if we can, as nearly as possible, simply because of the hydraulics. Because if you don't do that, then the whole system absorbs the hit.
Senator, I'm game, but I'm a detective. I have a keen sense for the obvious or the constitutional problem with respect to the amendment. And if other parties want to work diligently and they come up with an answer, that's a good thing. I would say that based on the information I have, I believe that this committee's work may continue through the weekend, May. So unless things change with presiding officers and you hear differently, beyond be alert for subsequent meetings. We have very few other issues to deal with, but they may or may not ultimately come to fruition. With respect to that, anybody else feeling compelled to chat with us?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Mr.
Cosgrove. We are adjourned.